Today on Rocket Pop, whew, literally one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yes.
The one movie.
Impeccable.
Oh, that just brings me to tears every year. The one movie that probably sets my mind and heart at the right spot as I think about my role in the world more than any other. It's 1946's It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
No movie I know captures the idea of significance, selflessness, generous, live by a different scorecard living than It's a Wonderful Life, full of warmth, humor, a little tragedy, some sadness, triumph, and heck, a few angels. It's a Wonderful Life is simply the must-watch movie for families to hold to some sort of biblical worldview at Christmas time. Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? It's a Wonderful Life on Rocket Pop.
Rocket Pop is gone.
Welcome to Rocket Pop Reviews, giving Christian families a reliable source for reviews of movies, shows, books, and podcasts.
Every four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle function.
We're serious about the fun of entertainment.
Nice to be in orbit.
Roger, 0G, and I feel fine.
And now your hosts, Steve Manuel and Jeff Davenport.
Hot dog, Jeff. Let's get into It's a Wonderful Life. It's Christmas time. It's if there's a Christmas tradition that somebody needs to have in their life, you're starting a family. What could we do for Christmas? Please make It's a Wonderful Life one of your holiday traditions.
We're talking about an old movie here. We're talking about an 80-year-old movie, and yet there's a reason it is a standard. And has been for so many years. This movie came out in 1946, shortly after World War II had ended. This movie is directed by a guy named Frank Capra. And all you need to know about Frank Capra is he was known at that time for making these earnest movies. That's the best way I can describe
right.
it. These non-ironic, earnest movies. When you think about this movie or you think about Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, this very earnest look at politics. This movie is so earnest and sweet and smart and not cheesy, really. It just works. Directed by Frank Capra, it was based off of a little short story that this guy, Philip Van Doren Stern, wrote called The Greatest Gift. He wrote this up and he sent it out as his Christmas card. He'd make copies of this little short story. And
that
somehow,
sounds like something you would do, Jeff, to write a little story and send it out with the Christmas cards.
Eventually, Frank Capra, under his Liberty Films banner, bought this story and turned it into this amazing movie for RKO. Strangely enough, this movie is really one of the most famous movies of all time. When it came out, it bombed. It didn't do very well. And it only picked up steam a little bit over time. Little fun bit of trivia here. One of the things that happened was the copyright lapsed on the movie. And so when the copyright lapsed, I think this is in the 1970s, what that meant is it became public domain.
I remember reading that.
Anyone could show this. So it didn't matter. You know, nowadays, well, we're only going to show Elf on ABC at this.
Sure.
Anyone, any network could show this movie as many times as they wanted to for free. And so Americans in the 1970s got inundated with this movie, and it became a Christmastime classic because of that. The main stars here are, I'll work backwards, this sweet guy named Henry Travers. He plays Clarence the Angel. Lionel Barrymore plays Mr. Potter. Mr. Potter is the mean old guy. I believe Lionel Barrymore is either Drew Barrymore's grandfather or great uncle or something. Sweet Donna Reed plays the main woman here, Mary Hatch Bailey, and the star of this movie, and really maybe the reason why this movie works better than any other reason, is Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart plays George Bailey, this wonderful character. Here's the story of It's a Wonderful Life. The movie starts, strangely, for a very old movie, the way a lot of modern movies start, which is we start way into the story at like the moment where, wait, what's going to happen? And all we know is George Bailey, some character, is in big trouble. Catch this. The movie opens with prayer. People
right.
all over this town praying, God, please help George Bailey. Oh, he's lost heart. Please help daddy. These prayers are going up from this little town. And these angels respond to this and go, we're going to help that guy because he is giving up on life. Then the whole movie jumps all the way back to George as a little boy, follows his journey.
He Tarantino's it. He goes all the way back.
Capra Tarantino'd it.
Yeah.
And he goes all the way back, and then we get to that low point, and then we see the rest of the story. The story is about George Bailey, who grows up in this small town of Bedford Falls, and all George wants to do is leave. At every turn, he just wants to leave. He doesn't like this little town. He's done with it. It's old-fashioned. I want to go. I want to build things. I want to go build bridges. I want to do this. I want to go travel. And at every turn, he stopped. At every turn, he has to stay home. And it's almost as if this unseen godlike force is making him stay in Bedford Falls. George gets to his low point is Christmas Eve. By the way, for this Christmas movie, there's no Christmas until about 4/5 of the way through, maybe 2/3 of the way through. On Christmas Eve, he loses all hope because of a bank issue. And he's like, he might go to jail. And he realizes his whole life has been a mistake after mistake. And the construct of the main engine of the movie is he goes, I wish I was never born. And an angel shows him what the town, what his family, what the world would be like if George had never been born. And he learns this incredibly valuable lesson about his importance. Now, if it was a modern movie, it'd be like, see, you matter. And you, the way you did things was, it was, George, don't you see at every point in your life, you're significant because, they don't use this language, but we'll use this language, yeah. You laid down your life for other people.
Right.
You did things for other people. It was all about what you gave away. There's a great moment, you can barely see it, but I want you to watch out for this if you're watching this movie, is over George's shoulder in some of the shots is a picture of his father who dies a little way into the movie. And there's a quote under the picture as if it was something his dad said a lot, or it was something that, you know, someone else said that his dad quoted. But the line is this: all you can take with you is that which you give away. And to me, that's the theme of the movie. George, I've never really loved the title, but It's a Wonderful Life. George's life is wonderful because even without really knowing it, he wasn't aware of these things. He would give away a part of himself, and give away a part of himself. And what he realizes by the end is, even though he never really left Bedford Falls, even though he never made a lot of money like his good buddy, even though the house he's in is in disrepair, his life was massively significant because he gave of himself for his family, for his friends, and for his little community. The craft of this movie is fun. It's not a musical. It's straightforward, black and white. Don't watch the colorized version. It looks weird. Just go, hey, kids, we're watching. It's black and white, and they'll get over it real fast. And you dive in. The way the story is told, it's slow in a good way. You build with these little moments that are just fun along the way. You've got a scene where he rescues his brother who falls through the ice. He's falling in love with this woman. There's a funny scene at the high school dance. There's lots of funny moments, but it's also building. And when you get to the point where George reaches his breaking point, you feel that frustration. So the craft is just excellent.
Now, Donna Reed, who plays Mary. Did she have a part in the Donna Reed show at one point?
She was not in the Donna Reed show. It was really That's strange. One of they the farmed strange that out. It was Bonnie Franklin, things. A young I'll be Bonnie darned. Franklin.
Huh. Bonnie Franklin. sorry, that threw me. I would just like to throw out that when you were mentioning the cast of characters, if you're older maybe and you used to grow up watching reruns of Our Gang, I would like to throw out that one of the friends that comes up in the high school dance is Alfalfa, is a grown-up Alfalfa.
You'll get to that moment, you'll go, that kid looks like Alfalfa. It is. It's him.
Alfalfa.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. So there's so many interesting things about the way, you know, you can go online and see these 25 fascinating things about the way It's a Wonderful Life was made, et cetera. One thing that I notice now, just because of learning about the history of the movie, because we're such fans of it, is how they had to fake up all of this snow that's all over the place all the time. And apparently this snow was it like potato?
Yeah, potato flakes. Yeah, potato or mixed flakes with soap, like probably.
Foam. And like it would get all over everything and it would get in your mouth. And apparently it was one of the hardships of filming the thing.
Also, and it was in the hottest, it was like the hottest LA had been in Burbank. I think it was shot in Burbank. The snow's really at the end of the movie. But yeah, they said it was incredibly hot as they were shooting that.
Now, we are people who, Christian worldview people, believe that the concept of angels is defined by the Bible. So whatever the Bible says about angels is true. Now, this is a spinoff of what we think is possible in the world of angels. And there's kind of a little wink, wink. He's saying at the beginning, what if it worked like this, you know? And there's a head angel named Joseph who's kind of running this lower level angel named Clarence. There's not a Clarence in the Bible. That's kind of the whole joke is that this dude, he calls himself Private First Class. He's trying to earn his way into, like, I'm trying to be a better angel. But
earn my wings.
Yeah, yeah. He's trying to work his way into the hierarchy. So, you know, it's not exactly like build your worldview around it. But what we would say is that it is well within the bounds of a Christian worldview based on the themes. George, one of the beauties of this film is that you get to see this guy outside of his context for his life. And during this strange, disturbing part where he's looking through life without him in it, as if he didn't ever exist, he doesn't have a family. He visits his mother, who doesn't have him as a son. He visits his wife, who doesn't have him as a husband. And it all seems empty, sad, cold, and really disturbing. So the magic of this movie is when you get to see that little window and then you put him back into the world where he started. Suddenly the problem of, well, do we have enough money? Is the house the way that I wish that it was? Those things seem so unimportant to the importance of my place in a community of other people and chiefly my place in my family. And so one thing I love about this movie is that it recasts, it does this very on the nose in the last 10 minutes of the movie, is it recasts what a rich man is. I just love it. While we live in a world where what's the market doing and how's your little business doing? And at the end of the year, I don't know about you, but at the end of the year, I'm considering what was our income for the year? What will our tax bracket be? You know, you're kind of making those decisions at the end of the year. And I love having that bubble popped with this pin at the end of the year and going, you know what really matters? The fact that I'm sitting with my family right now watching this around the fireplace or whatever, and just thinking to yourself, it does not get better than that. What a rich man is, a rich man in his 30s, 40s, 50s, is a man that has his wife at his side and children with him. It does not get better than that. Having a place in a community where you have people that receive from you. You have close enough friends that they actually need things and you get to give it to them and they receive it. It doesn't get better than that. It's a funny title, as you say, for a Christmas movie about this guy on this fanciful journey or whatever. But it really does. The title of the movie, It's a Wonderful Life. You leave this film when it turns off. You sit there thinking, God, am I blessed? Mm. God, what is this life that you have given me? How can I give more of myself to the people around me? Because when I'm gone, and we'll all be gone someday, this is what will matter, is how did I give, you know, did I receive from you, God, and did I give to the people around me? I just have to throw in as an anecdote. I don't know if it was a couple of years ago because there was too much holiday busyness or whatever, but we were coming up on Christmas Day, and I thought, we're going to go a Christmas season without seeing this as a family. We just haven't sat down. And so it was some, you know, 10:30 at night. I'm alone. I'm going like, this has to get done. I'm sitting here. I remember sitting on the floor, turning on It's a Wonderful Life and sitting there. And I would have to pause it at parts and just whimper a little bit and fall into some prayer and just go like, God, please, would you restore, you know, the love of life? David said it this way in the Psalms, would you restore to me the joy of my salvation? And just, I just love it. It is really a cleansing kind of a movie that kind of washes the windows of your soul, and you get to see this is what life's all about. So forgive me for waxing on.
That's why this movie is great. This movie's fun to watch. It's got a nice little message. It's deeper than that. I'm not over exaggerating. It resets me. It recalibrates me when I watch it. I've actually thought about watching this movie in July or August as a reminder.
Right.
Like, this is what life is all about. If you're a guy out there, you're a dad out there, and you can't convince your family to watch this, okay, will you watch it yourself alone and go, okay, Lord, I am losing sight of what is really important.
Yep.
This movie has done such medicine to me. I remember there was a time where my little crew, my family, we were looking around and going, everyone else is on top of the ball financially, and we just can't seem to get there. And there's this moment that has always been such a pure depiction of that emotion for me. George, he's giving and giving and giving, and yet even his own family doesn't seem to, they don't have the nice house in town, that kind of thing. And there's this guy who he's grown up with. The foil of George, who can't really seem to get enough, is Sam Wainwright. Sam Wainwright is the guy who he grew up with, and he's invested in all these things. And so he's this rich fat cat. Well, he comes back to town, and he's a nice guy. He accidentally rubs it in George's nose without really meaning to do it, and he leaves. And as George and Mary walk back to their car, it's an old car, and the door is open. And it's such a Frank Capra moment. George walks up to the car as they're getting in, doesn't say a word, and just kicks the door shut. And man, I remember seeing that moment in the time I was in, and I went, that's me. That's how I feel right now. And that is contrasted with, as you're saying, the end of the movie, which is, hang on, what is wealth? What are true riches? It's relationships. That's all about relationships.
Yeah, even the idea that the people who are in authority, the people who are threatening George, there's a bank examiner, and there's like a some kind of a policeman or a detective that's going to come arrest him because of his financial troubles. At the end of the movie, they come into the Christmas party that's happening at George's house, and there's all this warmth around. And the point is, look, there's been this financial stuff. It all gets cleared up by the end of the movie. But everybody wants to be in this place where there's this congeniality. There's a community feel. Everyone's together, and they're all singing a song. By the way, they're all singing Auld Lang Syne at the end of the movie. And that always struck me as false, because there's this spirit of togetherness and almost like a holy community that happens at the end of the movie. And I learned that they had subbed in that song. They tried another song. It was originally written to be a hymn. I forget which hymn. Wow. And I just wish, I wish we had that version of it. And they wanted it to be kind of more open-ended, just kind of good for mankind kind of thing. So they stuck in Auld Lang Syne at the end. But the feeling that you get at the end is that George's faithful life of consistent service wins. He wins in the end. And it's the kind of thing that, as you say, pours a little bit of steel into the backbone of a young dad who's bumping along. He didn't get the promotion. Maybe that'll come next year, the year after. He's got a couple of kids to feed. And he's just like, are we on the treadmill of when do we get ahead? And it's a good reminder that you, just by what you're doing, the path you're on itself is the reward. God is seeing you. It's thumbs up. Keep going, Dad. That's how I feel.
Yeah. Two things. One, there's a moment where George prays. He's at his lowest point.
Yes.
And he prays. Well, apparently they got it in a wide shot, but when they looked at it, they were like, it's got to be close up. So they did this, what at the time was called like an optical post-production zoom in, not a zoom, but like they cut in, because that is the fulcrum point. And one of the lessons of that is that he prays and the prayer is not answered the way he wants it to be answered.
Right.
At all. He's in fact shown all of these things that he's like, but that medicine is good medicine. I quoted the Psalms earlier. There's a Psalm that talks about like, by your affliction, I kind of came to my senses a little bit. And it's a great moment there. I also think there's something around, I've been chewing on this lately. We have too big of a world that we try to impact sometimes.
Amen.
And George's world was Bedford Falls. And the influence he had was on Bedford Falls. That was all he was really responsible for. And so, you know, someone could finish the movie and turn off and go, well, he didn't really impact New York City. George's like, yeah, but this was my world. Like, this right. is what I think I was held responsible. This immediate community was what I had true influence over. It's beautiful in that way. It shrinks it all down a little bit.
That's right.
So, so many great messages in this. The last thing that you really see in the movie is this book that Clarence gives him, and it says, "No man is a failure who has friends," which sounds light, but and if you hear that and go, "Oh, it's kind of a lame theme," watch the movie and you'll go, what he means by friends is a lot deeper than my pals.
Right.
Who have you laid down your life for? And yes. George has done that all throughout. So many good messages in this movie. So many good messages.
What about the family fit there, Jeff?
Yeah, let's talk about a few things to look out for. One thing you talked about, sort of worldview and angels. Probably the biggest thing you're going to have to talk to your kids about is, now hang on, everybody. When you die, you don't become an angel. That's what's happened, is that Clarence has died and a long time ago, and now he's an angel. So you'll have to watch out for that. There's a really tense moment, even though it's right in the middle of one of the most powerful moments, where George, as a young man, is working for the local pharmacist, and they're at odds, and the pharmacist slaps him real hard. And even my girls at this age, they kind of look away. You'll know it's coming.
It's jarring.
It's jarring. The kid falls in a lake at one point, but it's done really well. And, you know, little kids are like, but everything's going to be fine. Another thing is, really, the crux of the movie is, without saying it, is suicide. George is on a bridge going to kill himself because he thinks his life is not worth living. Yes. It's handled really well. They don't say that word, but that's what drives the movie. Another thing to look out for, and it's always so jarring, but I think it's when George starts to lose his mind in front of his family, he's at his breaking point. He's real mean to his kids. He's saying awful things, and he's so mad, and he says to Mary, he says, well, why do I have to have so many kids anyway? Yep. And if you're watching with your family, it's like watching dad get real angry.
It is.
It's a little hard to watch there.
Well, the other thing that comes to mind is, and this is just referencing the 50s, not really part of normal life, is like the kind of bar and club scene that was just kind of part of the social scene at some point. Now, I mean, my family, my kids have never been in a bar. They wouldn't know what that feels like. So there is drinking as a kind of normal thing. We see drunkenness. We see the guy that slaps George as a kid, he's drunk. And so there's a little bit of seediness where you kind of have to, what age do you think is kind of the lower threshold that should be watching this movie?
Maybe I'll go low on this movie, but like maybe 8 or 9, if you can explain some of those things. The seediness is never shown in a complimentary light. It's always in a, this is not a good thing here.
Right. True.
Especially the drunkenness and the anger. It's just part of the drama. And so if you can explain to a kid, look, this is what's going on here. This is why he's feeling this way. I think a kid can float through. So overall, I think it's a great family fit. It's the kind of movie, I'll say again, dad, watch it on your own. Like, it's going to be good medicine for you. Make it a tradition for your family. And maybe a good after the movie's over is, gosh, how are we doing as a crew? Like, how is our family? Yeah. Are we having a good impact on each other? Are we appreciating each other? It's funny, you watch it in the middle of Christmas buying frenzy. And the message of this movie is that, hey, it's It's not about the stuff, although you hear that from 100 different Christmas movies.
Sure.
It's what are we doing to impact the world around us and to lay down our lives a little bit for other people? And I just think that's such a potent message. I think, but back to your point, more than anything, it just recalibrates us. What is true wealth? Maybe another good symbol of this is every time George, because you'll have one of these in your house, I guarantee you. Every time George goes into his house and he goes upstairs, he puts his hand on, is it a newel? Is that what that's called?
Yeah, a little knob on top of the banister.
And every time he goes up, it comes off. And it drives him crazy. I have 100 of those things in my house.
Uh-huh.
One of them is our master bathroom. I have 100 things in my house. The end of the movie, after George has come to his epiphany, he's running upstairs. Man, he lifts that thing up and it comes off and he kisses it.
It's sweet, sweet moment.
And it's just this, like, appreciate what God's given you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Be cool with it. It's a great movie.
Yeah. When we think of Rocket Pop Reviews and the idea that there might be something redemptive in a movie that we could call out or underline, we're talking about It's a Wonderful Life. Yes. This is the movie. So, you know, we don't need any more examples to show you there is something nutritious that, for the love of God, watch this movie and consider it. Sit on it, because there's so much value in it.
It's nutritious and delicious. Let's not overlook, it's fun. There's funny moments. It's dramatic. It's a joy to watch. And it's so good for you. So, with that said, man, we can't rate this movie any higher. We give it 100 Buffalo Gals out of 10 Buffalo Gals. Buffalo Gal, won't you come out tonight?
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks for listening to Rocket Pop Reviews. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends. See you next time for another family-friendly review.